So before we kick off this episode, there's something important I wanted to talk about. What are you guys doing on the 31st of January next year?
Well, I am at a very exciting event and looking forward to it a lot.
Okay, Craig?
I think Craig will also.
I think I'm going to be spending some time with you guys.
So if you want to find out what it is that we're doing, then you can come along and watch us record our first ever live episode of Engine Nerds at Northumbria University. It starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are completely free. We'll put links in the show notes for you to come and reserve, where you can reserve tickets and take a look at what's going on. And we'll hopefully see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of Engine Nerds, a monthly podcast about all things engineering, coming to you from Northumbria University in Newcastle. My name's Nick Martin and I'm sat here with fellow Engine Nerds, Madeline Combrink and Craig Warren. On this episode, we're going to talk about some of our favourite Christmas engineering-y type facts, and to kick things off, we've got Craig this week. Given that you weren't here in the last episode, we thought you can go first.
The honour of going first.
We missed you very much.
We did miss you.
It was not the same as that.
Well, I mean, it was definitely not the same because we just peaked out on aerodynamics.
There was nobody to question you on aerodynamics.
There was nobody to control us and keep us from going full on aerodynamics.
That's what I'm here for. Okay, so my fact this week revolves around how to fit more presents. Christmas tree.
Get a bigger Christmas tree?
Yeah, that was the short answer, I guess. it's a bit of a tenuous link to get to how to fit more presents on.
Yeah.
So the reason I kind of came across this fact, bear with me on this one. I was endeavouring to fix the toilet in our house.
Right.
Yes. I told you had to bear with me.
Yeah.
And as part of doing that, I had to replace the siphon.
Okay, yeah.
And that led me to think, it didn't actually lead me to think, because this has been done before. But I thought it was such a genius idea, worth sharing. So you know, if you have to keep your Christmas tree alive over the period to stop it shedding, usually somebody has to kind of crawl in exceedingly uncomfortable fashion beneath water, which is a pretty awkward process. You know, I've been stabbed by those and decorations have dropped on me whilst trying to...
Plus, you don't want to, spill the water over the, you know, Christmas presents by mistake.
It's like a hazardous kind of exercise.
So when you do that, are you wearing full PP?
I think it definitely requires a risk assessment. So then I was like, well, surely somebody has kind of considered the idea of using a siphon water, thereby alleviating the need to crawl under it, allowing you to stack even more gifts without necessitating that crawl space. And sure enough, someone had. It was quite impressive. So that kind of leads me tenuously to the workings of a siphon.
Okay.
So how does that... I'll keep quiet. Explain. I'm thoroughly confused.
No, this all kind of comes back to just thinking about how a siphon operates. So it started off, obviously, repairing a toilet and then wended its way to a Christmas tree site. And it turns out there are two theories for trying to explain the principle behind a siphon.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, I guess that for those listening that exactly know what a siphon is.
Yeah, let's start with what a siphon is.
A siphon basically allows you to move like tube from some kind of reservoir.
Yeah.
And your tube is usually sort of verted. And the other end of the tube goes down to some kind of lower container. Examples of a siphon from my kind of petrol head days, you know. I have siphoned petrol from a fuel tank out into a kid before.
Yeah, I mean, if you're emptying a fish tank, that might be when you'd use a siphon.
I was just about to use an example like that. So my parents have little duct, but we also have little drops, so using that to clear out and certainly, it's just that only thing is just you have to get suction on the pipe.
That's the hazardous part.
Yes, that's the part.
The timing of that, you know, you don't end up with a a mouth.
Burnt water.
Yeah,
or petrol.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you have to initially get the water, you know, up into the pipe in order to get
to start the cycle.
Water or petrol, whatever liquid it is.
Because
you have to start.
Once you've started the process, that drives itself.
Yes.
But interesting enough, but the steer is faster than the side effect.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, so that was really interesting.
It was a really good project. It was one he suggested, it's not chemist. So his dad works in a quarry. Problem with the quarry is the house is it is always fixed to the out.
The quarry is typically below the water table, isn't it?
Yes, and they wanted to see if the siphon effect can boost the quarry to pump the water out than to pump out.
Or to improve the efficiency, I suppose.
And to improve the efficiency, but once you have this process start, then it drives itself.
So they had to use some kind of pump, the siphon process.
And they didn't use the siphon process by itself, did they? But they effectively used part of the siphon. So like they had to move water from one height to a higher height.
Yes.
But from what I can remember from what he was saying in his presentation, he was able to move the water by effectively moving it slightly higher and then back down again and then having the pump. So effectively using a partial siphoning effect that actually increased the efficiency of the system.
Mm. Yes. So if you can combine the process with but you use much less electricity, it sucks. So.
Yeah, okay.
So back to trees.
Which seems counterintuitive, right? Because like it seems like you're just creating a bit more, you know, you're having to do a bit more work to move the water a bit higher to then gain it back again, and surely there'd be some losses there. But I don't know, his data seems to suggest it more. Yeah.
So there are apparently two kind of explanations for why the siphon works. One is that the gravity that is pulling the liquid down the latter part of the U-shape causes a drop in pressure at the entry. That then allows the atmospheric pressure to push the liquid into the surface. And that, I think, sets a limit of the height siphon.
Yeah, so the siphon effect will only ever take two kind of, if you think about having two containers of liquid, one full and one empty, if you start siphoning that liquid from one container to the other, it will only ever level out the two.
Yes.
Yes.
It will never, you'll never get to a position where you'll start overfilling the other one. So, and that's because you've effectively got an imbalance in the atmospheric pressure, I suppose, on either side. Makes sense? No,
that doesn't actually make sense. Atmospheric is the same, but pressure that pipe is seen due to the atmospheric pressure and how far it is switched under.
Yeah, okay.
Because pressure is rho gh.
Yeah.
So whenever those height values are the same, they can stop.
Yeah.
That's my experience. Yeah, I might be wrong.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
What they reckon, though, that disproves the kind of gravity, what they think disproves the atmospheric pressure driving the siphon is that they've shown that a siphon
act.
Right, that's interesting.
I have no idea how they did that. I would refer you to the article that I was reading, which is from
put a link in the show notes to that.
And when they operate in vacuums, they can operate above the kind of theoretical height limit of siphon. So I think 10 meters is what predicted the theoretical limit atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, this comes to the idea of like what's the longest possible straw that you can create?
Yes.
So you can only ever create a straw which is around about 10 meters high.
Yeah.
Because straws don't work. Well, the way that straws work is that you have to create a vacuum effectively at the top. That's what you're doing when you're sucking in for a straw. You're creating a lower pressure. Well, not necessarily a vacuum, but you're creating a lower pressure, and then it's the atmospheric pressure which is pushing down on the water, which is then pushing the water up, and therefore the absolute longest straw that you can create must only be 10 meters, because that's how many, well, if you're using water, a liquid of density water, because that's how much the pressure difference can only produce pressure difference in order to pull that much water up by 10 meters. But you're saying that now they managed to magically do something different using the siphon.
This article, you know, they've shown that, the other theory that they propose to kind of explain how a siphon works, they call this cohesion tension theory.
Mm.
And the way they explain that is thinking about imagine having a pulley and having a metal chain hung over that pulley.
Yeah.
And one end of the chain is sitting higher level than the other end.
Yeah.
Which kind of, you know, mechanically describes the sort of the situation occurs with a siphon.
Yeah.
And when you start the chain moving,
it has momentum
to move
Yeah, so I guess the typically when you think about the siphon effect, the way in which the physics are described is to do with fluid statics, which is not, you know, there's no motion, there's no momentum involved. We don't think about how the fluid's really moving. We assume that there's some static, you know, effect of the water. Whereas, yeah, I guess when you really get into the subtleties of the siphon effect, you're talking about kinetic motion fluid, so that's going to, maybe, yeah, that's also going to have an effect, which, yeah, I guess could mean that you end up having a higher than 10 metre ability to move water higher than 10 metres.
So what they did was actually they degassed water vent cavity.
Yeah.
And once they'd done that, managed a height 15 meters.
Wow. With a siphon. Yeah. Nice.
So yeah, I'm not sure you would quite need that for the Christmas tree siphon, but
no.
Nevertheless, it's quite an interesting fact, I think.
Yeah.
Depends on big Christmas trees. So now I have two questions. Why not big issue Christmas tree?
Well, that opens up another story for this year, actually, because I'm not Christmas.
Oh,
that
was disappointed.
No, my house has to be puppy for Christmas.
Okay.
Christmas trees
and puppies don't mix.
Yeah.
Yes, that kind of avoids my second question, because my second show Christmas tree siphon.
If I had a Christmas tree, I would definitely be trying out a siphon this, because I have crawled painfully many times under the Christmas tree.
So we have an artificial Christmas tree, so we don't have this kind of problem.
Maybe we should investigate like the carbon footprint Christmas versus artificial.
I mean, I guess there isn't really a carbon footprint for a Christmas tree, right? But like a real Christmas tree. If anything, it's carbon positive, negative, whatever, you know.
Whatever, the
better for the environment. You'd have thought.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of just thinking about watering plants, so one of the things that this got me thinking about, so one of the reasons that people say, one of the other reasons for having a siphon for your Christmas tree, apart from the fact that it's difficult to water it, is if you want to keep your Christmas tree alive, but say before Christmas you need to go away for a few days to like a Christmas market in Germany, for example, or...
That sounds awful.
or, I don't know, some pre-Christmas vacation, I don't know, then, you know, you're going to leave your Christmas tree unattended, and it could well die in that time. Obviously, it's going to be terrible. So, yeah, you want a siphon to be able to keep your Christmas tree alive when you're going away. And it got me thinking about something else, which is that I've been reading about recently, and that's watering plants in general, but using automated systems. So I'm quite into using things like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis to build like bits and pieces like this. And I like having plants. I have a few in my office. We're sitting in my office at the moment. I have a couple of plants around, but I'm really rubbish at keeping them alive. And so
I'm just having a look just to check you haven't got the automated drip feeder.
I don't have an automated system on these ones yet, but I am considering, because this one I'm pointing to the plant that's directly behind my computer on my desk. That one's always like half dying, and it's like just at the point where it's starting to die, and I'm like, oh god, I need to feed it.
And the other one is a succulent, so he's okay.
The other one is an aloe vera plant, and that doesn't require a lot of watering, which is why it's doing so well.
I have two plants also. One is always dying, the other one is always dead.
Well, so the answer to this, really, as an engineer, is using like a Raspberry Pi, you can get humidity sensors and moisture sensors to detect the levels of moisture and humidity in the soil and in the general atmosphere, and then you can use that to then, you know, have like a little relay with a pump and a servo or whatever to have like a small water store that it will then drip feed feed the plant as necessary based on your desired outcome. And you know, you could even, I mean, just the idea of getting this data is just seems brilliant. But you know, you could see how you could even maybe then link that back to some kind of like, I don't know, clever machine learning techniques where you're like measuring your plant growth as well, and then optimizing the how much you're feeding and watering your plant based on all this stuff. Yeah.
Well, is it a lysimeter? It's basically like a kind of closed cell for plants that then it kind of measures sort of the mass of plant growing and also the moisture content, water.
That sounds amazing.
I mean, I think that's more of a kind of large-scale scientific experiment, perhaps.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Forget about how good they look. I'm going to turn my house plants into scientific experiments.
Build a lysimeter in your house, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how that would look on a Christmas tree, though.
I think more.
Enclosing your Christmas tree in a live cemetery might kind of take away the kind of Christmas feel somewhat, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You can decorate, still decorate the outside of it.
But not if you make it light up, if you're part of this.
It's not really touchy-feely when it's behind Perspex.
Right, it's time for our next engineering Christmassy fact, and that's my fact. And my fact is that reindeers can fly.
Okay, after how much eggnog do they fly?
Well, actually, it's nothing to do with the amount of eggnog they've been drinking. Which, by the way, actually, last year, just on a slight side note here, last year was the first year that I tried eggnog, and as in last Christmas. I actually really enjoyed it. I'm gonna have some this year, hopefully.
I've become very fond of
glühwein.
Glühwein, that's how I know it. From German, again, going back to German Christmas markets.
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of UK German Christmas markets are not proper German markets.
And you can't get, I'm gonna really embarrass myself in front of all our hundreds of German listeners. But, Langentasse, which is
that's the fire thing over with brandy and sugar.
So you get the glühwein, and then you have this little kind of metal kind of thing on top of the glühwein, which you drench in a flammable liquor, which is usually brandy or something like that. You set that on fire, the whole thing goes up in flames, and it's amazing.
So we can all agree that Germany is awesome, especially at Christmas and for the food.
Yeah.
Yes.
My first experience of glühwein was in Berlin a couple of years ago. I went out for the first time Christmas, and that's where glühwein was delightful waffles with all of the cream berries on top of them.
Yeah, I know which ones you mean.
Yeah, I mean, the primary reasons of going to the German market are food, I would say. I mean, the kind of the beautiful decorations and things are a bonus.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, after that slight detour, so I can't remember. I was talking about reindeers, that they can fly. Now, so there is a slight caveat, and the caveat is that they have to be travelling at around about, by my very basic calculations, which I'm sure listeners can verify. I reckon around about Mach 3, which is close to
900
or so meters per second, mm-hmm. which is roughly how many miles an hour is that?
I don't know, I don't speak miles per hour.
It's roughly, I think it's about 3.5 times by that. Anyway, don't know.
1.6.
We'll count that. Is it 1.6? Maybe it is. We'll cut this bit out. So basically, if you take a reindeer's antlers, so I was looking at this, and reindeer antlers are not circular in shape. They tend to be slightly kind of asymmetric. Kind of almost slightly oval in shape, and they have like kind of little bits on them that basically makes.
This is it, like the cross section.
The cross section, yeah. Sorry,
so
of the end.
Airfoil shaped antlers.
I wouldn't refer to them as being airfoil shaped, hence why they need to be travelling quite fast. But in theory, any object which is somewhat non-circular in shape. I mean, a circular object's not going to create lift unless it's spinning. That's to do with the Magnus effect, which we're not going to talk about. And because we're not going to geek out on aerodynamics too much.
Not 2 weeks in a row.
Craig is here to control us and keep us on track.
But if you then take that object, even if it's a symmetric object, or symmetric in one axis, and you know, angle it relative to the flow, which a reindeer could potentially do, you know, by angling its head. Then if it was to angle its head up slightly, so it was to look up a little bit, then, and it was travelling at around about Mach 3, then in theory it would produce enough lift on the antlers lift the reindeer up.
It's interesting because in terms of reindeer facts, they will get a whole new lift device every year because they shed their antlers.
That is true.
So they're going to be growing a new
set of wings, effectively.
Yeah, a new set of wings each year.
I saw a CFD where some of these cows can fly, and what they did is they also did a CFD simulation to see that how fast does a cow have to travel before Jade's lift. And interestingly enough, it was also around Mach 3.
Right. Okay. That's okay. I mean, reindeers are not too dissimilar in shape to cows. I mean, cows don't have antlers, but then, to be honest, I did this analysis assuming that the reindeer's body wasn't actually producing any lift, which probably is not, you know.
So this one was more about cow's body, and the cow's body did generate lift. But
yeah.
So can they fly? Yes, but they go fast enough.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't calculate, we'll leave this as an open question to listeners, was the power that that would require, because, I mean, they're going to create a reasonable amount of drag at Mach 3, so, you know.
What's required, yeah, to get them to that speed.
So,
rockets.
Yeah.
You can do anything with a rocket. Strap the rockets to him.
I don't really have too much more to say.
Oh, okay.
Apart from that, yeah.
I have some more reindeer facts, not really related to reindeer lift generating antler mechanisms. Would you like to know where Rudolph's kind of red nose comes from?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, apparently reindeer have 25% more blood vessels in their noses than we do.
Right, okay. I can believe that.
I
wonder how that compares to dogs have quite a few more. I don't know exactly many and how that compares to reindeers, but...
It's a fact for another day.
That's a fact for another day, yeah.
which is designed to kind of, you know, they're designed to oxidize blood. And that's why they have or can't have red
right.
all the blood.
Okay.
Yeah, Rudolph Jane.
Presumably it doesn't necessarily glow. Well, I suppose under an infrared light.
Yeah, it says apparently the increased blood flow in their nose keeps their nose warm and also helps regulate their temperature. Apparently.
Oh, okay.
Reindeer. Right. So reindeers can also be called caribou in America.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Can weigh up to 240.
Well, I definitely knew that because I used that information to calculate how much lift force that antlers would need to generate.
So therefore, you probably also know that it can be up to 2 meters in length.
I don't
know because you didn't do body calculations.
I didn't do any body calculations.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. yeah, now I'm out.
Right, okay, so now we're coming to our final fact of the show. That's Madeline's fact.
So mine is a little bit on the dark side, but I'm so used to my dark tendencies by now. So
yeah, okay.
So my fact is that if Santa did exist, he's dead now.
By if, you mean like obviously Santa definitely exists.
If we presume that at one stage there was a Santa Claus, my fact is that he's dead now.
You're crushing childhood dreams here, Madeline.
Yeah.
Were you hoping for a present from Santa?
Let's not take the conversation down that path. I was going to say, well, it depends if you've been naughty or nice.
Okay, I think you better explain yourself, and then I'm sure we'll be able to come up with an explanation as to why
I say that.
Why this is fake news.
Okay, why this is fake news. So, again, with this one, you have to bear with me for a bit. So let's say that there are approximately 2 billion children in the world.
Yeah, okay.
And with that, we assume that it's people under the age of 18, but Santa only appears to visit children from the Western world.
Right.
So that reduces the workload bit to 15%, so we get about 378 million children he has to visit.
Okay.
So if we take that there's an average of 3.5 children per household, and we presume that there's at least one good child per house, that we then get to 91.8 million homes that needs to presents delivered in a night on Christmas Eve.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm following your logic. Yeah.
So times. Yes. So then Santa has 31 hours. To work with, if we presume that he's going to travel from east to west, which makes sense.
Yeah, because then he can effectively follow the sunrise, or like the sunrise can be chasing him effectively, so that he can
get more than 24 hours.
Yeah.
So if we work this out, then he has about 822 visits per second needs to make.
822 visits per second.
Yes. So every second he must visit 822 houses.
Right. Okay.
So from that is that says that Santa has about 0.001 1/1000th of a second, to visit every house, to park, to hop out, go down the chimney, fill the stockings, eat whatever they left for him, and get back in their sleigh, visit the next house.
Yeah.
So if we assume that all of these houses are equally spaced apart, then, you know, we get that he has a total trip of 72 million miles that he has to do in 10 hours.
Yeah.
And then what we get from that is, let's say that houses are equally spaced.
Yeah.
It means that his sleigh has to move in roughly about 605 miles per second. For him to do this trip, if we take his average velocity.
So, yeah, I was going to say, does that mean, because presumably he has to stop at these houses.
Yes.
So
he has a thousandth of a second to stop at every house and to do everything that he needs to do and get back into his sleigh.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So he must be traveling at roughly about 3,000 times the speed of sound.
Right.
So he's traveling at roughly about Mach 3,000.
So, I mean, that's like... three orders of magnitude higher than the speed that the reindeers would need in order to create the lift. So, you know, that validates,
that's
I think, my
fact. That's a positive conclusion I think we've reached here.
Okay, it's a positive conclusion so far. but, yes, there's another. So we know now how fast he has to go in order to make all of this visit. But the problem comes in with the payload. Because if we assume that every child just gets a medium-sized gift,
I like it how, by the way, I just like it how you say that the problem is only becoming apparent now with the payload, not any of the other things.
We can do Mach 3000 and whatever.
Yeah, that's fine. That's not a problem.
Right.
No, okay. But we have magic reindeer that... Oh, we're getting to the reindeer still. So we have reindeer that can do this. So each child gets a medium-sized gift of about 2 pounds. That means that our sleigh is carrying roughly about 320,000 tons, and we don't include Santa because we all know he's a chubby, but he's
okay, but that's within the noise, I think.
Yeah, that's in the noise band. So what this comes down to is that there's roughly, like, if we count in for the reindeers as well, that, okay, so we have to come up with the number of reindeers that we need to pull this. Because if we assume that, you know, every reindeer, if we know that every reindeer, normal reindeer, can pull about 300 pounds, roughly.
Yeah.
Then what the amount of reindeer that we're going to need to pull this sleigh is we will need about 215,000 reindeers.
Does that include, are you taking into account the fact that as you add a reindeer, you're adding additional mass?
Yes.
To the system. So, okay, yeah, you factored that in.
We factored that in because that, okay. So now we are at about 360,000 tons, including, okay, Santa is still in the noise, but we're adding the reindeers.
Yeah.
So that is the amount of mass that needs to travel through the air. Now, just to put this into context of how much it is,
yeah,
that is about the weight of 4 large container ships.
Okay.
Okay, so 4 large container ships needs to travel at 650 miles per second.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah, okay.
So because...
But I mean, at the moment, you've not talked about acceleration. You've just said that that needs to travel at a constant speed.
Okay, we're assuming average speed, but we're going to get to the acceleration.
Yeah,
but
okay, all right.
There's a bigger problem. There's a bigger problem. With this. That's the acceleration that's beginning that story.
Right.
So all of this, you know, the 350,000 tons traveling at 650 miles per second creates a lot of air resistance. So that means that the reindeer is starting up. And here's where the acceleration and deceleration really becomes a problem.
I mean, I think Rudolph's nose is definitely going to
glow.
At those kind of speeds.
Yeah. So Rudolph is absorbing about 14.3 quintillion joules of energy per second.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Which means that he's, you know, he spontaneously is going to combust, but
and turn into like a plasma, I suppose.
Yes, but he's not going to vaporize for 4.26 thousandths of a second.
So how many homes can he reach in that
5
time?
Five. So that's not a problem. So they can get to 5 hours before Rudolph combusts.
Yeah. So then they just need to change out reindeers, right?
Yeah, but the problem is by that time Santa's already dead. So Santa died from the acceleration because they had to go from a dead stop to 650 miles per second in less than 0.001 seconds.
Well, actually, they would have to go faster than that, right? Because
yes.
They'd need to be able to
That's the average speed.
That's the average speed, yeah.
Okay, but if we assume, let's just say, best case scenario, 650 miles per second acceleration in 0.01 seconds, the acceleration force that Santa would be exposed to is about 17,000 Gs. Now, the average human body can only withstand 46.2 Gs, or that's the maximum to what we can.
46.2, that's more than I thought. That's presumably if Santa has not only his traditional red suit, but also like some special compression
That's astronauts. That's what astronauts
are exposed to. Yeah, like the special kind of astronaut gear, yeah.
Yes, so the moment that acceleration...
So maybe that's why Santa Claus looks so
chubby.
Because it's not that he's actually chubby, it's that he's got an astronaut suit on underneath.
Yeah, but remember, he's dead because he wasn't exposed to 46.2 Gs. He was exposed to 7,000 Gs.
Okay, right. Well, never... Okay.
So, what happened to Santa is he would have been, at the very first start of his very first trip, he would have been pinned to the back of the sleigh with about 4 million pounds of force.
Right.
And that would have instantly crushed in his bones.
Okay, but the one thing you forget in your entire analysis here, which, you know, I commend... is that, you know, Santa is magic. Like, it's magic that does it all. You don't need to do any of this.
Also, you know, the other thing that you've omitted from that detailed analysis, the elves.
Yeah.
And the elves are definitely magic.
Oh, they did too.
Crushed. Okay. Literally, and...
So that's how I got to have Santa was alive. He's now.
Okay.
Unless he's magic and the reindeers is also magic.
Which is definitely the case of all of our young listeners, though.
Okay, so there is still the chance of getting Christmas presents.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, being a radar person, I couldn't kind of let your fact go by without introducing a bit of radar.
Yeah.
And it turns out you can see how Santa Claus is attempting this ridiculous feat by logging on to the Santa Claus radar.
I have heard of this, actually. So yeah, you can log on to it on Christmas Eve during the night and you can track his progress.
Yes.
Around the world. Does NASA have a tracking system on it as well? Or is this a similar one? There's probably multiple different tracking systems.
So there's definitely one that goes under the acronym NORAD, which has been around since 1955.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Which is the North American Aerospace Defense Command.
Yeah.
Tracks that. And, you know, given the world we live in now, there is also a Google Santa tracked well.
So now I have a question. If Santa is, why is he going, frost or so just using...
Well, I mean, there has to be a certain amount of teleportation, right? Because not everyone's a chimney. We don't have a chimney, and he still manages to deliver presents to us.
Is Max getting a present from Santa?
Hopefully we all are. I wrote my list.
And sent it up your imaginary chimney.
Yeah. Well, no, I posted it to the North Pole, obviously.
Yeah.
Come on.
Shucks.
You're obviously not getting any presents.
Damn. I've been doing it wrong for all these years.
Okay, that's all we've got time for in this Christmas episode of Engineerds. If you want to get in touch with us about any of our Christmassy facts that we've been talking about, you can do so via our Twitter handles. I'm on @ND_Martin. Craig.
I'm @DocCraigWarren.
Madeline.
@Al_Comrade.
Or you can email us @engineers.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook with our handle @EndlessUK. And you can find all of our previous episodes on our website, engineers.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Merry Christmas
and a Happy New Year.
God, we're not going to be... You didn't tell me we were going to be singing.